Welcome to Supercharge My Practice, a podcast dedicated to helping you build a thriving and fulfilling natural therapies business. Each week, your host, Anil Mustafa, interviews leading practitioners and field experts, sharing proven tactics, inspiring stories, and actionable steps that will help you unlock your potential. Supercharge My Practice is proudly brought to you by My Appointments Practice Management System.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Supercharge My Practice podcast. Today's guest is Christine Pope, who, after earning a commerce degree specializing in accounting and finance, transitioned from a two-decade career in venture capital and investment banking to pursue her passion for natural medicine. She's an experienced educator with expertise in nutrition, homeopathy, and naturopathy. Since 2014, Christine has also served on the board of the Australian Traditional Medicine Society, which is the largest natural medicine association in Australia. Recently, she was also appointed president and is passionate about supporting the growth of the natural health sector. Christine, welcome. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here with me today.
Oh, thanks, Anil, and thanks so much for asking me to be here too.
I always love to hear what you have to say, Christine, so I'm really looking forward to this. Now, can we start by you sharing your journey as a practitioner and starting off in the early days of being in practice and how it led you to the role as president of the ATMS?
Well, I think the president role came about because of my previous career, but also being in this industry. But just going back to, so when I studied, it was basically like I did homeopathy nutrition to start with. And basically when you graduated, you know, I'd done the business studies module and said, you go and set up your practice. So, of course, that's what I did. I went in January after I graduated, found some rooms to rent, hung up my shingle, and then sat there and waited for clients to arrive. And guess what?
Which is what a lot of people do, isn't it?
Yeah, it really didn't work too well. So there are a few other things I did to actually get a bit busier. But from that, as soon as I graduated, my homeopath at the time asked me to come on a small not-for-profit, like a state group for the homeopaths. And from that role, I was actually then on a working group looking at a registration or sort of a national board where all practitioners would be listed. And because I was working with some of the ATMS directors, one of them tapped me on the shoulder and asked if I'd be interested in a casual vacancy. So from there, I then got elected to the board formally and have been treasurer for a number of years and more recently put my hand up for president because we've just recruited a new CEO. And being the one in Sydney who was working part-time, I pretty well knew that I'd be the one recruiting and mentoring up new CEOs. So I thought it was more appropriate to do that from the role of president than the role of treasurer.
Yes, that does make sense. So can we go back a little bit more into your earlier career then? Because like you said, a lot of us graduate from school and we do a very, very small amount of work on business.
Yep.
And then we open up our doors and we just expect we're going to be flooded with all these patients and are going to come and find us, and that never happens. So I know that you've also co-founded or you co-owned a practice called Elemental Health, which is a multimodality practice with a lot of practitioners working in the office. So can you talk us through a little bit more of that earlier practice journey of how you started seeing new clients and how that led to you co-owning Elemental Health, and also some of the highs and lows that you experience as a solo practitioner or as a practice owner where you have other practitioners working with you?
Yeah. Okay, so look, my goal my first year in practice, it wasn't a big goal. I wanted to cover my rent. So because I was renting premises 2 days a week, and I think in my first month I had one client who was actually the owner of the practice. So I was working in a multimodality practice, which is in the same building I'm still in, but and I'm pointing here because we're now at the front of the building, but we're at the back of the building at the time. And there was a yoga studio with 6 treatment rooms. So that was quite good from the perspective of, you know, people coming in and out. But I think it was only when I started running small group workshops in homeopathy, you know, how to use homeopathy in the home. And I probably ran 4 of those in the first year. And I think if I hadn't done that, I would never have built a client or income stream because I tried other things like, you know, I put the ad in the paper and it got pretty much no response. And I also did a flyer drop, although I did pick up one client from that flyer drop within 2 days. And I always remember that client because, you know, it came directly from that drop. And she also did really well on a remedy, which was good. But over time, I figured out that, you know, I needed to get out there. And you know, as a practitioner, especially in the early years in practice, you just do more and more study about how to be a better practitioner. And homeopathy is like, it's how long is a piece of string? You know, you can never really, really ever feel like you are comfortable as a homeopath, that you know everything. So I always remember one of my mentors, because my first couple of years in practice, I was still doing some mentoring with some other practitioners and sitting in their clinics. And I said to one of them, who'd been in practice for over 20 years, I said, when will I know that, you know, I've got there? And she just smiled at me and said, I'll let you know. she still hasn't told me. So, you know. But look, I think that's part of the journey. And one of the things I figured out, and this is probably took me a while, was about 5 years in, was that the ways that we were getting business at the time were expensive and painful. And what I really needed to do was actually join some local networking groups and actually, you know, networking with the small business community. And that was really a game changer for my practice. So all I did was I rang up a client of mine, a coaching client of mine, who was a great networker. And I said, you know, what's on in the area that I could go to? And she said, oh, there's this lunch today. So I went to that group for 3 years. So it was really good because it was women's only. They met at lunchtime. And what you realize was that everyone in small business has the same challenges. And you always seem to think that, you know, our industry is different. We're very special. But it's all those challenges of, should I have a website? What should be on the website? Oh, my God, I've appointed someone to build my website and it's only half done and they've disappeared. You know, and it was also that early days with social media, which I think was also really useful. And I'm very grateful for the amount of free publicity I've had through social media, although, you know, nowadays it's not really free, but I don't mind paying for it now because I've built a reasonable following.
Excellent. And that's one thing I think is something that a lot of newer practitioners are forgetting, is how important that networking is, because a lot of people immediately jump straight to social media.
Yeah.
And, you know, 5-10 years ago, being on social media organically gave you really good responses, but now it's more of a pay to play. And it's not that social media doesn't work. It does. Paid ads work exceptionally well if done properly. Mm-hmm. But organic social media marketing can take so much energy and so much time today to build a practice. And so for me personally, what's come out of a lot of my podcast recording is that I've interviewed a lot of people like us who have been in practice for a very, very long period of time. And consistently what every one of those people has said is that nothing has built their business quicker than the face-to-face networking events that they have actually attended. So for those listening, wherever possible, networking is always going to get you a far better response in a far shorter period of time. There's also, when you meet someone in person, that know, like, and trust factor grows a lot quicker than on social
media. Oh, exactly. And I mean, I now do this regular networking group, which is a break off from BNI, because I used to call BNI Blokes Networking International. Too many rules for me. But we meet once fortnight, and then the other fortnight we just have a coffee catch up. And I was going to say, one of the things I've noticed, you know, I remember with my earlier networking group, after 18 months, I sort of looked around the room and realized that I really had a group of women who had all either sent me clients or been my clients. Mm-hmm. So instead of me pushing my message and my marketing, I felt like a team out there talking me up.
Yeah.
And, well, maybe not talking me up, but you know what I mean.
It's like you recommend
talking about why people should come and see you. And that's invaluable. You know, and that was a lot better organic traffic than perhaps a lot of social media. So I still do networking groups, and I still remember the coach I work with who said you had to do one event a month plus one stretch event. So I was always trying to justify that something else I did was a stretch event.
What do you mean by stretch event? What's a stretch event?
Oh, something that takes you out of your comfort zone.
Ah, I love that. Yeah.
So last week I was involved in running a big conference for Council of Small Business Organisations, which is my other board. And I've got to say, walking Chris Minns out of the door stretched me out of my comfort zone a lot. So I'm still thinking I should be able to count that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by the way, he was actually lovely. We had a really nice chat. So, you know, and he didn't even feel bad about the fact that it wasn't the CEO or someone actually important.
Well, president of ATMS would make you someone important, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, in terms of the committee structures, I'm also the treasurer for COSPO. So there you go.
Excellent. And so what about some of the highs and lows you face in running your practice? Can you take us down that journey of what did you find challenging? What did you find easy? What did you find rewarding? Any kind of insights that you can share with my listeners about your personal journey?
I'm not sure I ever found anything easy. trying to think back. Well, actually, no, I'm over-ordering a lot of homeopathics is probably one of the things. Because, you know, homeopaths are terrible. It's like every time you go to a seminar, it's like, oh, I've got to have that and I've got to have it in five different potencies. And it's like, oh, dear. Anyway, look, I suppose one of the things about my journey is after I've been in practice for about 7 years, the building I was in, the top level burnt down. So that's why I actually ended up running, co-owning a business with a colleague. So it was the other osteopath who I'd worked with. And we actually set up this practice that I'm sitting in now and ran it for 10 years. And the funny thing was we sort of set it up on the basis of, well, between the two of us, we could split the rent and, you know, we'd be okay. And then, of course, the financial aspect of there were a whole bunch of overheads other than rent. Mainly because we wanted to have it looking really nice and clean and crisp and corporate. And so three of our colleagues from the other premises said, well, they're all operating out of other places which weren't great, and they all said, oh, can we come in with you? So we used that money to have a call centre answering our phones and an online booking system. And those two things, I've got to say, the online booking system pays for itself every single day because someone gets cancellation, someone else is booked into that appointment. You know, and it just is so worthwhile. And our clients love it too. So, you know, that's the other thing. And I think running the practice with others, and I think what I really liked doing was supporting practitioners in building their practices. I have found it quite frustrating on occasion because she seemed to do a really good job of getting massage therapists built up over 18 months and then they all go decide I'm going to Byron or the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the ones we've had here at the moment have been here for a while, so that's good. And we have a lovely combination of different therapies here, which are a little not really all remedial massage. It's more lymphatic, and they're both Dr. Voda trained. And we've also got a wonderful craniosacral therapist here.
Oh, fantastic. Excellent. Mm. And most practitioners who know you would consider you to be a very successful practitioner. Why do you think, or what do you attribute your success to? What do you think has made you as confident as you are today, and what's led you to be here and be seen as successful amongst your peers?
I think part of it is about being on a board, which people give a lot more kudos to than perhaps it deserves, because most of the time it's just hard work. Mm. But, I mean, you know, it helps if you've actually had a background in finance and you understand how companies run too. But also being on a board is not about running the company. It's about setting the strategy and direction and working with the CEO to achieve that. But, you know, the CEO manages the office and the team. So it's important to be clear about that direction. I think the other thing too is there was an advantage in being older. You know, when I graduated in my early 40s, people assumed that you knew more than you did. Really, you've been doing this forever. And I think that is part of it. You know, look, most of the graduates who come out have great knowledge and skills, and it's not really a question of actually being in a position where you don't know what to do. You always know what to do. I mean, sometimes it's just about accepting that what they taught you at college with these, you know, detailed 9-page treatment plans just overwhelms the client. And what you really need to do is focus on 3 or 4 things that are really, you know, absolutely the client can implement and will make significant change. So it's always about concentrating on the things where you're going to find the biggest bang for your buck. I think the other thing too is it does help to narrow down your focus about what your ideal client is. So nowadays, you know, I'm focusing more on older demographic. And what I find is really good with that age group is by the time they come in to see you, they really want to get better. So they are prepared to do the work. I was going to say my less than ideal client is someone who wants the magic wand. Don't have one of those.
Yeah, none of us do, unfortunately.
Go and see someone else. We can't do the shopping and prepare the food for you, unfortunately. Because if we could, I'd hire someone like me to do it.
Absolutely. And can I just say that for me personally, I think your success and the reason why you get results with your patients is your confidence. And so naturally it would have helped you being an older practitioner when you started. I started when I was 19, so I had the complete opposite experience to you, but I got really good responses from my patients and therefore I was able to build a very successful practice. But I think confidence is the key here. And it doesn't matter if you don't know all the answers, because it doesn't matter how much you know, you're never going to know everything. And you don't need to know everything. You learn as you go and you become a better practitioner by not knowing everything, because then you're continuously educating yourself and growing and building on your skill sets as well. So I think it's the confidence is that when somebody comes across as confident, I don't know the answers, but that's okay because I'm going to find the answers.
Either we can find the answers or we can support the systems that are overwhelmed and we'll get improvement, you know, because at the end of the day, I know there's some people get really bogged down with the, well, what thing that you've done is making a difference? It's like, and the best answer I ever heard was each adds 16%. Mm. Now, I don't know why they came up with the number 16%, but I thought it was a doozy, because it's like each of the things you're doing, you know, whether you're exercising, whether you're improving your diet, is improving your health by 16%. So decide, if you're not going to do it, which 16% you want to be without.
I actually quite like that as a patient, a naturopath and a homeopath. Yeah. I actually quite like that, because I'm one of those people that I've had chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia since I was 15. And often you try so many things, you have no idea what's actually working. And so you get frustrated because you don't know what you should continue doing and what you should not do because it's not working. So that actually really simplifies it from a patient perspective, knowing that the things that they are doing is making some difference. So just continue doing those. I mean, it's so simple, but it's so profound at the same time because of its simplicity. So, yeah, I love that. I love that saying.
And I think the other thing is, having done a lot of presentations in corporate, and I was presenting complex financial information and making it simple. And I always remember one of my clients saying to me, that's the first time I've ever heard interest rate swaps explained in a way I understood. Mm-hmm. So I'm always thinking about, how do I make this really simple? What's the analogy I use? I talk a lot about plumbing, because, you know, everyone understands what a pipe is.
Mm.
Yeah. So when I'm talking about the digestive tract, I don't use a lot of technical language. Because most of the time, and, you know, I found in finance, we're great at this. We're using a lot of jargon to make ourselves sound smarter than we were. And, you know, BS the client into paying the money that we wanted. So, you know, I in clinic, I'm really careful to make sure I understand, I explain to people what we're going to do and why we're doing it and what difference it will make. Because ultimately that's what they're there for. They're there to get improvement in their health or to feel better. They're not there just to have a nice chat with you every week.
Which is a really valuable lesson in that in itself, because a lot of practitioners, especially the younger ones, feel this need to sound educated, and therefore they try to use these big words to make themselves sound smart and come across as educated to their patients, but all it's doing is actually overwhelming the patients. And so when you break things down into something really simple, it actually makes it a lot easier. I was working with a gentleman who's a PR expert, and he's been in the military for a very, very long period of time as the PR person. And so when we were putting together some documents, he said to me, whatever you write, whether it be on social media or any forms of documents, you should always write as if you're writing for a 13-year-old boy. And his analogy behind that was that a 13-year-old boy can understand simple stuff, and therefore if you're technology or not your technology, your terminology, and the information that you're putting out there is easy enough for a 13-year-old to understand, then anyone's going to be able to understand it. And I think patients appreciate that simplicity more today than ever before, because we are all so overwhelmed and over bombarded. And attention, keeping people's attention is very difficult today as well.
Yeah, exactly. People have quite short attention spans.
Mm.
So I think overwhelming them with lengthy treatment plans is not ideal.
Absolutely.
Like, you need to know where you're going and what your plan is for the client, but you don't need to communicate every single step of it to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that.
Because for most people that is horrendously overwhelming.
Absolutely. It is absolutely. So, Christine, you have facilitated a lot of workshops for new graduates or practitioners that haven't been, that are newly graduated or been out for a short period of time. And obviously, you've been with the ATMS for over 10 years now. So, you would have had a lot of feedback from members coming to the board or coming to ATMS in general, looking for advice or seeking help on growing their businesses. I'd love to hear what are some of the challenges that you've seen amongst newer practitioners and what kind of advice you would have for someone who's trying to grow their practice today.
Well, a few years ago, the consistent, you know, we would survey the room and go, who has a website? And less than half the people in the room would put their hands up. And I'd just about go, you know, oh, you can't see this on a podcast, but putting my head in my hands, it's like, how do you expect to be found? Like, you know, if you're trying to find a plumber at 3 o'clock in the morning because your pipes have burst, where do you go? You go to the internet. So if you're not on the internet, you're invisible. Now, some people say, oh, I have a Facebook page or I have this. It's like, no, no. If you're a professional, you need, you know, even if it's just a brochure with your services on. Because when we actually sat down about a year after we'd moved into the new space as Elemental Health, we looked at, you know, where did our clients come from? And we basically gathered it from about 200 clients. And what we found was that, you know, about a third of them, so the practitioners told me it was 80% word of mouth, right? Mm-hmm. What our data showed was it was about a third from the website, about a third from people who had seen people in the clinic, and about 20% from other practitioners sending people in. So this is where your networking is really important. And the other 10% was split between a few things, but signage was also really important. So, you know, it actually encouraged us to spend a bit more money on signage, because the number of times I've had someone say, oh, I didn't even know there was a naturopath, osteopath there until I was walking past the downstairs and I had a sore back and I saw the sign. So, you know, don't overlook the obvious things if you've got any street frontage, but it was just, it surprises me that people are so resistant to setting up a website. It's almost like, do you not want to tell people that you're out there in business? And then I would say the same resistance to social media. You know, there's quite a bit of snobbery around it, actually. I think it is. I don't really enjoy social media, but that's probably because it's really helped my practice build over, you know, a decade. Even if it is my mother who likes most of my posts, but we all need our fans.
Yeah.
But you know, the thing is, I have people going, oh no, I don't have social media because, you know, privacy, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, if you're trying to run and grow a business, you need to be able to market your business where people are at. And 2/3 of people have a Facebook account, you know, and you can look at other, types of social media, but it depends where your demographic is at. So I'd say, you know, make sure you build your marketing channels and put as much effort into that as you do going to study new tools.
Absolutely. And social media doesn't need to be scary. You don't need to worry about the privacy stuff because you can control what you're putting on there.
Yeah. So, well, but you can also control your settings so that not everyone's going to friend you on, so if you've got a business page.
Yeah.
You know, and you just need to have the account to be able to set up the business page.
And the website also doesn't need to be complicated. I think part of the reason why people get really overwhelmed with websites is because they think it has to be this really flashy website. A landing page, which just is a single page that has a bit of information, is actually going to be enough for you to get access or get exposure to your ideal clients to get them to take action. And actually, we're going to look at one of your landing pages a little bit later, Christine, because you nailed one of those. So we'll come back to that, but we'll move on to your courses now, because a lot of practitioners are moving into that space of having courses as a supplementary income stream or because they want to move into more of a group environment, helping more patients. So I'd love to know, one, when did you start looking into courses? Because I'm assuming you didn't do this at the start of your career. And I personally don't think people should look at doing these at the start of their careers. I think they should focus on the one-on-one stuff, really nail out their knowledge, get their confidence before they look at. That's just my personal opinion. So I'd love to know, A, when did you get started in building courses, and what kind of difficulties did you face with the courses, and how have you found it's impacted your earning potential? And also, actually, why did you go into building your courses? Was it because you wanted an additional income stream, or was it because you wanted to move into that space of helping more people in a shorter period of time?
I'll start with that question. Because what I would really like to do is reduce the burden of chronic disease in Australia by 50%. And the only way I could see I would do that would be an online program, because clearly I can't treat that many people one-to-one. But going back, we were running this event called Natural Medicine Week, and we would all run workshops or morning teas or something, you know, in the clinic during that week. And I would run my natural medicine first aid workshop, and I used to run it in a small office, but then the last one I think I had 30 people registered, so I had some space at a local yoga studio. And so I've been running those workshops for quite a while, and I quite like that energy of working one to many. You know, it's actually really positive, because people tend to actually work and support each other as well. So it's a different dynamic to the one-on-one. And so through Natural Medicine Week, I mean, the first year I was doing it online, I had all these bits and pieces of systems that I was trying to cobble together, you know, Zoom for the platform and recording. And then I had Eventbrite for the registrations, and I was marketing on social media, but I don't even think you could create a Facebook event at that point. So it was all a bit higgledy-piggledy. So one of the difficulties when I was started looking at online courses in about, I think, late 2021 was the difficulty of kind of marrying up all these pieces of technology, you know, and it's really frustrating, because like with Eventbrite, you can send them out all the details of the event, but you can't have any further contact with them because of the privacy settings. And then, you know, integrating the Zoom and everything else. So I looked at three different online platforms. The first one I started with, and after 2 weeks, I just went, oh, this is all too hard. And then I started with one called Simplero, which is what I'm using at the moment. And that all integrates really nicely. You know, like I've got my mailing list on there through that. I can jump on and send out an email to, you know, a section of my mailing list that came in through a particular offer or freemium. I can, you know, and so I set up some of my courses or some of my free workshops to act as the freemium for my program. So last year or two years ago, it was one of them. I think it was, I did one on balancing blood sugar. And so I've had a couple of either free webinars or a easy one-pan meal download that have worked really well to drive sign-ups to the list. So, you know, look, I think one of the reasons for doing online programs was to get into that one-to-many without the difficulty of organising venues and times, because, you know, everyone's busy and it's always really hard to find, when you're running a live workshop, a time that will actually get enough people into that event to make it worthwhile running. With an online program, you've got the option of either running it, you know, you can run it at nighttime, you can record it. And so the people who missed that week have got that recording. So it does make it a lot easier. But I've got to say, what I've found is I've been, you know, there's been a few ups and downs with this. So I didn't find I got that many sales of the program to start with. And interestingly, the sales I did get tended to be people who'd already seen me before.
No like and trust.
So there you go. And then subsequently what I've actually found is I'm still playing around with it to a certain extent. I ran an online version of the program. So we met weekly for 8 weeks, and that got reasonable numbers in it. Before Christmas, I did one which was using homeopathy made easy. And I had a really lovely group in that. And so I have found that while what I wanted to do was have like an evergreen course that people would just buy and do, what's actually working better is when I do it face-to-face and have that interaction with people. So if you could find a way to solve that dilemma, that'd be good.
Yeah. And I interviewed Kira Sutherland a little while ago, and everybody knows that she's a very, very successful practitioner.
Yeah.
And she said one of the things that makes her the least amount of money is her online courses. And so this is a thing that she said, exactly what you said, that the one-to-one where she's actually physically there with people rather than people doing their own thing. always works a lot better for her. And she did say that it may just be her marketing methods that aren't working as opposed to the actual courses themselves, because I know there's a lot of very successful practitioners.
And I think the other thing too is it's also about, you know, where that niche of mine is with the age group. They're probably more reluctant to sign up for an online program initially.
Yes, makes sense. Yeah, absolutely.
But what I do find is once they get on, and, you know, I ran quite a few online programs for COVID because people were desperate to actually have other people to talk to.
Yeah, good time to be building online space.
So I do find I can hold that space really well for an hour, and I really enjoy that. So I think one of the things I'm actually toying with at the moment is whether I run my program as a here's the program, but also a 12-month support with monthly Q&A or something. I'm still kind of working through the details on that. But, yeah, I agree with Kira, because the other problem is as an experienced practitioner, you're like, oh, I'll get this VA to do the back end of the site, and then I've got the cost of the site plus the cost of the VA plus the marketing. You can add up pretty quickly.
Absolutely.
You need to be very targeted in what you're doing.
I belong to a coaching group. It's a bunch of people who are either coaches or service-based businesses, and there's a lot of people in this group. We recently went to Bali. There was over 70 or 80 of us in that room, and consistently across the board, out of everybody that I had spoken to, the ones that did the best were the ones that had that personalized service attached to their online courses and programs, as opposed to just being evergreen, go do your own thing and at your own pace. Even just having a supportive Facebook group or community behind your course where people can come in and ask questions still adds that human element into it. So that's personally what I have found. But again, I do know that there are some very successful practitioners just selling online courses. I guess my question to you on that front then, Christine, is for the effort that it's taking you to get to where you are with all of your courses, you do have the four courses now. Has it been worth the time and energy? Have you enjoyed the process? Do you have any advice, pros and cons about that whole process for any practitioners that are looking to move into that online space?
I think it's really important that you built your list before you launch the program. And so I think that was something I was doing in conjunction with the program, and probably it took me, you know, and you need to be a little bit more patient too, because, and I'm not really good at that. So it takes about 10 months for someone to convert from a lead to a purchase.
Wow. That's some good metrics.
Yeah. So, you know, from a perspective of you running a site that's costing you $300 a month, you better be prepared to have a reasonable offer that you are marketing quite effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I have had, you know, when I get really busy with my board roles, then everything goes quiet on the other front. But, you know, the other thing from the online program has been, it's been really good visibility. I'm talking at a conference about it in a few months because of this. And also, you know, a lot of the people who've bought the program have then come and see me in person or have seen my material about the program and gone, oh, well, she's the person to book in with.
Yeah.
So it has actually really helped me keep my books full without doing a lot of other marketing. So, you know, there are swings and roundabouts with it. But, look, I enjoy the presenting and interacting with a group and working through issues, and I've seen some really good results with it. You know, there's actually some really good writing about the value of groups.
Absolutely.
For helping. So, you know, I think it's something that we need to explore, but I think if you're going into it, you need to have a decent budget to fund it up front.
Yeah, and time. You can't be doing this, you know, when you're a super busy in practice. You do need to carve out time to be able to put the energy and effort behind it. And I'm going through it myself. I've put together, as you know, Christine, I run a lot of workshops, which I run for ACMS, but also some that I've been running through the My Appointments platform. And I love teaching. I love being able to, you know, give information and my experiences to people. But what I was finding consistently was no matter how much advice I was giving people, even though I was giving them all the answers, I was finding that very few were actually implementing those things because they need someone there holding their hands. So I came up with a course called Thrive in Practice, which is all about teaching practitioners all the foundational elements. So I'm going through the exact same things that you're going through. It's working out what's the best tech platform. And I've already was building my own email list. And the one thing I can say is that the course has 8 modules and 60 lessons and a 45-page workbook that I've put together while incredibly unwell over the last month. And but what I've found from it is that it's given me so much content for social media now. or for email.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
For everything else, for blogs even. So now I can literally take one of those lessons and then turn it into a blog or turn it into five different social media posts.
And so, apparently there's an AI called Relevance, which you can use to turn your webinar into a whole bunch of content too.
Oh, I must look into that one. That's great. And so you have mentioned lead magnets, because you've got the on-demand webinars on your website, which are free to access. You've also got your free ebook, some of which are recipe books and other things like that. And one thing you've mentioned twice today, which I absolutely love, is that you're obviously across your metrics, and that's what's making a difference. You know how long it takes to convert a lead. You know from being in your practice where your people are coming from, and that in itself is so incredibly powerful to drive decisions forward. So can you shed a little bit more light on the leads that you're getting from your website? What are you using those, like how are you using those leads to draw traffic or to build people into your system so that you can contact them? And have they been effective for you?
So I'd still say the jury's out on whether they've been effective, but I certainly have increased the revenue year on year for the programs. And what I have is I've got a segmented list so that I know who came in because they did the natural medicine first aid workshop, and would they be the ones who are then interested in the homeopathic 8-part workshop, you know, or the ones who came in with 1-pound meal downloads, are they interested in the aging outrageously? Because I use really detailed targeting on Facebook to focus on my demographic rather than, everyone. And I'm not ashamed to say that I only put women in there, because I know that even the guys who come in, it will be because their partners made them. So I do use a lot of data to try and inform my decisions. Sometimes there's still an element of gut in it. You know, it's like I'll put up a blog and go, oh yeah, I'll promote that, and it's like crickets. And I've got this other one about, you know, six ways to increase the vegetables in your diet, and that always does incredibly well. Huh. So, you know, it's that was one of the other things I found out with metrics. Best blog titles are 9 to 13 words and have...
Same as email subject lines I read recently. Yeah. I was very surprised by it. I always thought shorter email subject lines.
I know, that was what I always thought too. So, but I do find the blogs with longer titles get more traction.
I think that may be because there's more keywords in there, so that when people are going to search on Google, that's why they're actually working. But the email for me is more interesting, because obviously that's not going to show up in Google. So why do those do better than shorter taglines? I think that's something that people have to test as well.
My email response rate is between 45% to 60%.
That's phenomenal.
Of people opening the emails. So I do... Because personally, I hate being spammed, so I'm really careful about only sending it out to the segment of the list that's going to be interested in that offer.
And
they unsubscribe, that's great, because they're not my client, they're not going to buy anything from me. And frankly, going forward, you know, I pay on the number of subscribers I've got, so I'd be happier to have a cleaner list.
Yeah. And that's something that I think is very, very important for people to hear, because so many people get so upset by seeing unsubscribers. But in actual fact, it's a good thing, not just because of the money that you potentially would be saving depending on what platform you're using, but it means that person's not ready for your information, or they're not interested in your information. So what's the point of having them on there in the first place?
Exactly.
It also decreases your metrics too, right? Because if they're on your list and they never open your stuff, that's not good metrics for you, or good analytics for you to work with as well.
As I like to say, they're not your client.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. So I've got a couple more questions for you, Christine. Have we still got some time to go through those?
Yeah, I think we're okay for a couple more minutes.
Excellent. Great. So I want to talk about your landing page for your Aging Outrageously program that you run. And I'm actually going to go over and read through some of the things on the page, the things that I love, because I think one of the biggest areas that practitioners or business owners in general go wrong is in their copy, in the marketing text that they're using. And so they'll put something out on Facebook, they'll put something out on social media, but it's not hitting the mark. It's not getting their target audience connected to their messages. And I think you've absolutely nailed this. So just move this out the way.
Thank you. I did have help. I'm going to be really honest.
Well, you know what? If people are looking for help, they should go to your website and have a look at it, because to your landing page, and that's at ChristinePopeNutritionist.com. where they can actually see the genius of what you've created. And it's not just the wording, it's also the layout of that as well. So it starts off with, would you like to have the energy you had 20 years ago? Well, of course, if you're talking about aging outrageously, that's going to hit your target market immediately. That's what they're going to resonate with. Then you talk about that you've got a practical workshop and wellbeing course for over 50. So you're very clearly outlining who your target audience is. You're also talking about the fact that it's easy to understand, because as an older population that you're targeting, they're typically not going to have much confidence in using online stuff. So again, you're targeting a lot of things there. And one of the things I love the most is this saying. It says, the old excuse of it's just old age is dead. Old used to be 50, now it's 80. Now I'm highlighting these because the genius of what you've done is that you're talking in the language of your ideal clients. You're actually bringing to the fact wording or things that they think about themselves. And so immediately they're reading this copy and they're resonating with this copy because it's showing exactly, or it's saying exactly what they're thinking. And that's where you start getting much, much better conversion rates on those sorts of things as well. Then you've got some information about how to enroll. You've got some testimonials there about people, or I should call them reviews, about people who have done your program. You talk about what's covered in the program. You then, of course, go into a lovely picture of yourself and some information about you, which qualifies the reason why you are the person to be able to deliver this course. And then you go into some more things about breaking down what they're actually going to learn. Again, a few more testimonials. And then it's outrageously practical. You've got some reasons why the program is practical. And the other thing that I really love is you very clearly outlined, this is for you if, and this course isn't right for you if. So again, your ideal clients are looking at this going, this is for me, this is not for me. They can immediately identify whether this course is for them. And then you tell them what they're going to learn in the program as well. And then you've got a button to start the program. So again, you said that you've had a little bit of help with building the content out, but you also mentioned off camera that this is a few iterations down the track. So I'm imagining that this means that you put the content out there. It wasn't perfect initially, but you kept tweaking until you've got something that's as good as this. Is that correct?
Yeah. And also I was working with a lady called Miranda Ivy on Facebook ads, and she made a few suggestions, which I've incorporated. One of them was there's a section where I talked about what's included in the program, but she got me to be really specific about, you know, 45 recipes from 3 meal plans and this, and, you know, pull out all that data to make the offer seem richer. Mm-hmm. And some of the other language you were talking about earlier was things I'd heard and didn't agree with, you know, so it was like, but I responded to. In fact, there was one quote that was actually from a TV show where he said 50 is the new 30. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of playing around with that a little bit because I was, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
In terms of some of the other, yeah, the who it's for and who it's not for, I actually, my brain thinks like that. I just want people to be really clear about, yes, I'm the right practitioner for you, or no, you should go and see someone else.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be really, really demanding and not do what you're told, go see someone else.
Yeah, I love that. And to finish up with Christine then, I do want to ask, based on your extensive experience, if a practitioner is struggling to grow their business, what advice would you have for them?
Get out and have a green tea with every other practitioner in the area and tell them about what you do.
Love it. Fantastic.
You're going to be sitting in clinic with nothing to do. Why not use that time productively?
Yeah, love it. Fantastic. Now, how can my listeners find out a little bit more about you?
Well, they can obviously go and have a look at my program, Aging Outrageously. I'm also on social media as Christine Pope, Naturopath and Nutritionist. I'm on Instagram as All About Natural Medicine, and I also have a blog on my website. So probably the easiest way to stay in touch is, you know, subscribe to the blog.
Excellent. And I'll have all of the links in the show notes as well. Christine, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show today. Thank you for sharing such valuable advice with my listeners.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Anil.
Thank you for tuning in today, and I look forward to having you join me in the next episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to stay up to date with the latest releases. And for more helpful tips, look for me on Instagram under the handle Supercharged My Practice. This podcast is proudly sponsored by My Appointments.